Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for June 7th, 2026. A week left after the conventions and plenty of drama in Minnesota politics this past week. We'll break it all down as well. But we're a week closer to that primary and a major discussion in the state of whether or not we should do away with endorsing conventions. I think it is an ongoing conversation, but the more and more I think independent voters and moderate voters get frustrated by the process, the more likely it is that the primary will happen. On the other side is activists, more powerful than ever, louder than ever. They like the endorsement system the way it is because they're willing to spend a few Saturdays in the spring getting their special interest point of view heard. Both parties have this challenge, as we saw with Klobuchar's challenge from the left, and the fact that basically everybody's ignoring the Republican convention. Two other contrasting stories this week: the Democrats had their Humphrey Mondale dinner, packed house. Republicans trying to hold their Reagan dinner, and they had to postpone because most likely they couldn't get unity. Republican Party in Minnesota likely to continue to have financial challenges in this election cycle only because most of the big money is backing the non-endorsed candidates, Lisa Daymuth for governor and Michelle Tafoya for Senate. It's the underlying story to watch in the mood of Minnesota as we go. Filings closed. You can check on your local races at FluenceElectionTracker.com. Again, that's FluenceElectionTracker.com. We have all the races at the state level by district tracked, and we'll rank them and dig into them as well. And as always, you can find all of our content at thedailyagenda.com, including this show and previous episodes, as well as WCCORadio.com. You know, one of the districts that people are watching this year is the first congressional district in southern Minnesota. Brad Finstead's the incumbent. He won the seat after Congressman Jim Hagedorn passed away. Hagedorn won the seat after Tim Walz chose not to run again in 2018. Hagedorn came very close in 2016. Walz held that district for 10 years. And before him, Gil Gutnick held it. Before him, Tim Penny held it. And it's one of these districts that has an independent streak historically. Of course, the lines change a little. But if you look at the changing demographics of Rochester, of Mankato, you look at the impact of ag in this economy, you look at the challenges ag has, and you start to say, well, if there's a huge wave, this is a district that could shift towards Democrats. Jake Johnson has run so far an impressive campaign. He was out early. He's raised some good money. Brad Finstead, as I've said before, has fit the district very well. He ranks high in ag committee leadership, and that's very important for the district. But if President Trump remains unpopular, as he is in places like South Dakota and Iowa, those states that border the first district could be the mood of the Midwest shown on national scale. So this week, for the first time, we sit down and we talk to Jake Johnson. He's a candidate for Congress, and he joins me when we come back on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to...
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. Joining me this week is Jake Johnson. He's running for Congress in the 1st Congressional District. And in a year with so much volatility, this race has started to get more attention against Representative Brad Finstad. Jake joins me now. Jake, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Let's just start out with, who are you and why do you want to go to Washington?
Yeah, no, for sure. I grew up in our district, grew up in Stuartville, in a very working class household. My dad was a garbage man. My mom was a meter reader at the gas company, and I've got 10 siblings. And so, you know, when you grow up like that, you certainly value and appreciate hard work, but also local community supports. I had access to a school system and a church community that wrapped their arms around me, next door neighbors and extended family members who said, hey, we're not going to let you fall through the cracks. But even with that support, even with our hard work, you know, I was a SNAP kid and we were a Medicaid family and I needed Pell Grants to be able to afford to go to college. And so I did go to college, got my teaching degree at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse, came back to Southern Minnesota, married my wife, Molly, who actually also grew up in Stuartville, two streets down. And we met on the bus in third grade. We've had four boys now aged 15, 14, 12, and 9. I've been a math teacher for 20 years in Rochester Public Schools. And so really have loved my time in the classroom, greatly, greatly valued that opportunity to make a difference in the lives of students. But the reality was, you know, I was watching, as many people were, our congressmen go to Washington, D.C. And I think it's fair to say, sell us out and make things more expensive. And it just didn't feel like a good time to sit on the sidelines and watch the American dream that I got to live in Stuartville, watch it come under threat. And so running for Congress to give the working people of this district a voice again on matters like making things cheaper and making things easier.
When you say, I'll go back to where in the birth order of 11 are you?
I've got two older stepbrothers. And so I'm technically third, although they were, when my mom married my stepdad, they were already out of the home. So I consider myself maybe the oldest as far as the responsibilities I had and how I spent my time.
Got it. When you say sell out, what do you mean by that? This is a show that we like to have a conversation and understand depth. And, you know, one of the things, Congress is never popular, but people's congressperson directly, they tend to like them. So what is it that spurred you into public service this time?
Yeah. I think we've spent a lot of time on this campaign, listening to people. And, you know, we've talked to farmers, we've talked to small business owners, we've talked to families, we've talked to working people, retired people, students, and things are too expensive. I mean, the reality is Congressman Finstad stood in front of the camera in 2024 in a grocery store and said, Joe Biden is making things more expensive and I'm going to bring down the cost of things like groceries. And then he went to Washington, D.C. and has advocated for policies that many people feel, I certainly believe, that have made things more expensive. I think the tariffs are proof point number one. It's a tax that, you know, 90% of that tax has been paid by Americans. And so the tariffs is something that I think is just wreaking havoc for people all across southern Minnesota. I also think, you know, his vote for the Big Beautiful Bill, as it's been dubbed, that passed by one vote, that vote is really damaging when it comes to SNAP benefits, Medicaid benefits, and is a massive tax increase for billionaires, big corporations, and also really bad on the national debt. You know, depending on who you talk to, which group you look at, driving up the national debt by somewhere between $3 and $6 trillion. And so fiscal responsibility is a big problem, and passing that on to future generations feels like a problem. And then the Iran war, which Congressman Finstead in his votes is functionally just said, let's keep this thing going, in his war powers resolution votes, we've seen it. We've seen it at the pump, whether it's $4 a gallon gas or $5 a gallon diesel. Anything that is getting to us now by semi truck, which is a lot, is just those costs are being passed on to folks in southern Minnesota. And so, when we think about all of these decisions, listen, you can't say you're going to bring down the cost of groceries and then, you know, advocate for tariffs, advocate for an Iran war, advocate for health care cuts and passing on tax breaks. And so we feel like there's a story to be told. There's a lot of people that are open to hearing that story. And this idea that we can do better, we deserve better, is something that we're hearing from people all across southern Minnesota.
You're running as a DFLer, and obviously between 2020 and 2024, inflation was real too. Mm-hmm. President Biden took a lot of the heat for that, but looking at your website, you talk about fewer regulations. Democrats have instituted significant regulations that have driven up costs. What would you tell to your own party on those topics?
I'd say there's a way to look at regulations where we're not burdening people unnecessarily. A really good example, we were out in Fairmont at a senior care facility talking to the administrator there. She's been in that business for 40 years. And I said, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you do? And what would you fix? And it wasn't more funding. It wasn't better facilities. It was the paperwork is out of control. She gave me an example, a story. They had a Medicare intake for someone. And then 6 months later, that person was discharged. And just for that 6 month period of time, it was 900 pages of paperwork for those 6 months. And she said, we've had to hire extra people just to do the paperwork. I think there's reasonable regulations that we can look at depending on the sector, depending on where we're at, that keep us safe, that protect our water, protect our soil, protect our population. But also, I don't think we need paperwork just for the sake of paperwork. And so finding ways to make sure that our government is efficient and effective and not burdensome for the people that are trying to do the work is something that I think is important. So that the people who are innovating, so that the people who are providing care at the local level are able to do it. We certainly don't need an onerous government that's just bureaucratic bloat for the sake of having it.
One of the other areas that, you know, has had its points of tension is regulation on ag. Are there things that if you go to Washington, you want farmers in your district to know about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that I hope our farmers know, I mean, we spent time out at Farm Fest last summer. We're looking forward to it again. We are an incredibly agriculturally productive district, ninth most in the country. We have incredible farmers who are innovating, who are making things work across southern Minnesota, in spite of massive headwinds that we've heard about. And when we were out at Farm Fest, I'll tell you, we heard from people all across the political spectrum who said these tariffs do need to end. Our farmers do not want checks in the mail. They want export markets, whether that's USAID, whether that's SNAP, whether that's farm to school. These are all markets that, you know, farmers work to build, they advocated for, and then now have been taken away. And so when you've got grain bins still filled with last year's soybeans with no market to sell to, this is a direct result of policies that this administration and quite frankly, administrations for decades now have advocated for. And so what I hope our farmers would know about me and my campaign is we're going to listen to folks. We're hosting 21 town hall meetings across this district, one in every county, starting this summer and up through Election Day. I will always be there to listen. I will always be a sounding board. And while we may not always agree on things, you can always count on me to show up, listen, and then speak with your voice. I don't know how somebody would represent the people of southern Minnesota if you're not willing to to show up and listen. And so above all else, I hope our farmers know I'm going to Washington, D.C. to end the tariffs and end the Iran war. That's where my votes, that's where my voice will be. And we see that as a reasonable way to start bringing down input costs in the short term while building towards a brighter future.
What committees do you want to serve on if you're successful in your campaign?
Yeah, I'd love to serve on the Ag Committee. Like I said, ninth most agriculturally productive district. We grow 3 million acres of corn, 2 million acres of soybeans. We're the turkey capital of the world. Martin County is the hog capital of Minnesota. We do agriculture very well here. So I'd love to serve on the Ag Committee. I've been a teacher for 20 years. Education and workforce would be very interesting to me. Would love to serve on that committee and make sure that we can find ways to invest in education and job opportunities for people moving forward and support the great local work that's done right here in Southern Minnesota. And also, if they'll give me three, I'd love to serve on the Veterans Committee as well. My stepfather served three tours in Vietnam. He's very proud of that service. And we have a rich history and tradition here in Southern Minnesota supporting our veterans. We're here on D-Day. I'm out in Laverne, actually, and there's a beautiful veterans monument, and you could just see the reflective folks there. Helped a guy find his dad's name on the pavers there, and you see the sacrifices that have been made by our men and women in uniform. I think serving on the Veterans Committee and honoring their service, probably not much higher calling than a representative could ask for.
When we come back, more with Jake Johnson. He's a Democrat. He's running for Congress in the first district. It's a race we're watching closely this year. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WC.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't. And you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
CCO. We are back on Sunday Take. I'm Blaise Olson. My guest this week is Jake Johnson, and we're talking about the first congressional district. This is a district that over time has gone back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. There's a certain independent streak in the district. The district has also changed over time. The growth of Rochester and Mankato and some smaller population declines in other cities, including impacts on the Ag Committee. Jake, before we took the break, you talked about the committees you'd want to serve on, education being one. You've been a teacher for 20 years. Minnesota has been an education leader over the years, but we've started to slip. What have you seen as a teacher, A, that Washington can fix, or B, what maybe Minnesota needs to fix from the state capitol as a teacher?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. It's one when people know that I'm a teacher, you know, a lot of times when I'm out campaigning, people want to know, Jake, what can you do for education? It's important to a lot of people. As I've traveled across this district, one thing I know is every small town has a heartbeat, and it's healthcare, and it's education, and it's job opportunities. And that is what allows us to maintain our life here in Southern Minnesota. I advocate for the full funding of special education from the federal government. Right now, it is a mandate that is unfunded. It is not funded by the federal government at levels that it's supposed to be. And so what then happens, you know, you can follow that. That runs right down to the state government. And then a lot of the money that is being poured into schools by the state is going to cover special education services for our students that are legally required, legally mandated. And what it does is it stretches the budget of the state and the local governments or local districts far too thin. And so then your small school district, which is already strapped and people are already feeling the property tax burden, don't see opportunity in their schools, and it ends up consolidating and closing. And so then that's a little bit more of that, the walls closing in on our small communities. And so I think from the federal level, what I would advocate for very strongly is that funding mechanism being fully implemented. Listen, if we can find money for ballrooms and bombs, we can find money for schools. I do believe that. And then I think when I think about the state government, listen, education is our future. Talk to people all the time. They want better for our kids than what we had. And this is unfortunately the first generation of Americans that does not believe that that will be the case. Part of that is education funding. Part of it too, though, I think, is holding our local school districts accountable for the successes of our students and making sure that the teachers that are in the classroom are well-trained, are professionals, and that we are attracting our best and our brightest into the classroom to work with that next generation of Southern Minnesotans.
I want to just kind of stick on education because it's a core part of where your experience is. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the last Democratic member of Congress from the first district is Governor Tim Walz. And as governor, you know, education was really challenged beyond the pandemic. I had two kids go through school. Discipline has become an issue in schools. Recruiting teachers has become an ongoing issue. And it just seems as though, don't take this as trite as it sounds, but that you have some good sound bites, but like roll up your sleeves, really tell me how you fix education or turn it around in this state, because that's what Minnesotans, it's what it gets asked to me probably more than any other issue as I travel the state.
Yep. I mean, honestly, the biggest impact in a classroom. Now, again, I might be biased, but research backs this up. The biggest impact, the biggest force multiplier in a child's education is the teacher in the classroom. I think there's two things that you could do to improve the quality of teaching and also the supply of teaching. And it's both. It's not one or the other. You pay teachers more to attract people on the front end, and then you hold them more accountable throughout their careers. I think it has to be both. Listen, I teach AP calculus. It's students that are advanced. They're going off to four-year universities. They're you know, they're off to big, bright, beautiful futures. If I ask those students on a year-by-year basis, how many of you are going into education to be teachers? It's zero or one, right? These are the students that I want working with my kids. These are the students that you should want working with the next generation of leaders, but they're not doing it because, let's be honest, the compensation on the front end is not commensurate with their education level. So you pay them more. That's the front end. That creates a supply of people. And then when people get in, and when you have 10 people vying for job opportunities instead of one, you can really have a competitive job market where teachers know that they need to do a great job throughout their career, but then we don't let 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, you know, when you really get into it, we don't just say, well, you're good, it's fine, you know, you're just a body in the room. What we need is to say, you know what, we need you to keep doing top quality work. We need you to keep innovating. And if we had both of those things, I really do feel like we could turn it around pretty quickly.
Last question on education. You know, I totally agree that the quality of teacher matters, the relationship of teachers. I wasn't ever going to make it through your AP Calc class, just for the record. But my kids, you know, aspired to, and one of them got there eventually in college. But just when you think about that, math is obviously one of the core pieces. Is there any sense that either mandates or drive from Education Minnesota or others have taken away from kind of the core curriculums, reading, writing, math? You know, I mean, obviously, I clearly want social studies taught in school. If it hadn't been, I probably never would have made it through. But just talk about the extra stuff that teachers have been required to add to the classroom these last, I don't know, 10 or 12 years.
Yeah. Two decades in the classroom, I will tell you, there's a lot of things that teachers are asked to do, are required to do, that quite frankly have very little to do with my success of my students in the classroom. And so I think getting rid of those unnecessary burdens that teachers feel, and allow us to focus on what we do best, which is collaborating together and creating the best learning environments for our students. You know, this goes back a little bit to the paperwork side of things. We have a very hard time filling the needs for special education teachers. A lot of that is when you talk to them, when you poll them, and we've done this in Rochester, if you actually ask them, what are the things that make your job the hardest, the least satisfying, that get in the way of your ability to make an impact in the lives of students? For a lot of them, it truly is the paperwork. And so finding ways to streamline those processes for teachers so that we can really make an impact with students, we can support families on their educational journeys is what we should be striving toward. Not having a system that is just bloated with unnecessary requirements.
I noticed on your website, you talk about corporate PAC dollars. Money is a big part of politics. It has been for a long time. It continues to be. It's one thing for you not to take corporate dollars, but obviously political parties do take corporate dollars. The DCCC takes corporate dollars. Is it authentic to say you won't take corporate dollars when it's likely that they'll still be spent on your behalf?
I'm not sure. I guess what I would say is we've made the decision from the beginning that corporate money, money where I think it's relatively clear those dollars are being used to influence members of Congress in a meaningful way is something that we should be striving to end. I've never run for Congress before. This is my first time through. And what I'm learning is money, you're right, is a massive part of what we do. And I think a lot of people feel like that is incredibly unfortunate. It would be fantastic if I could spend my time 100% of the time just connecting with voters. And so what we've tried to do on our campaign is build a people-powered movement. It's why when we looked at how we could get on the ballot, there's two ways. You can pay a $300 fee, sign your name, and that's it. You can collect signatures to be on the ballot. For us, the goal was 1,000. We got 5,000 signatures from our constituents. We want people to know who we're working for. And that's a big part of it. It's one of the reasons as well why we're hosting a town hall in every county. And we're running against a guy that won't hold a town hall at all. I think it's important that people understand that they can reach out to me anytime and actually get to talk to somebody, a representative who is willing to show up and speak out.
Have you met Brad Finstad? Shook his hand, looked him in the eye?
Never have. Nope.
Why not?
Our paths haven't crossed. I had a meeting with one of his staffers, maybe 18 months ago or so. There were a lot of people frustrated about snap cuts. I was one of them. We asked for a meeting with Congressman Finstad. He was unavailable, unfortunately. And so, I'm not opposed to meeting with Congressman Finstad and chatting with him. He's just kind of a hard guy to find, quite frankly.
You know, I will just say this. I watched your campaign. I get it. I get the tone and tenor, but I will tell you that if you want to find Brad Finstad, he's around the district. And so I would just be mindful of, what sounds good versus the reality. And then my last question is, one of the reasons town halls have declined, and I worked for members of Congress over 30 years ago on, is just civility. It's really hard to have a civil town hall when you're an incumbent. And that goes both ways. Frankly, the Tea Party disrupted Democrats back in the day, and Indivisible and others disrupt Republican members now. How do you make sure that you don't add to kind of the divide and discourse in the district?
I can only control what I can do. We are very proud. I've said from the beginning of this campaign, we're going to host a town hall in every county. We said it. And honestly, it takes a lot of coordination. I understand it takes a lot of coordination to build these and actually actively try to encourage people to be part of the conversation. And I would push back a little on the fact that he is around the district, our congressman. A lot of the folks that I talk to do not feel that way, do not experience that. And so for us, on our campaign, we just want to point out the fact that we will be available, and contrast with the fact that the in-person town hall meeting, while there will be disruptors, I'm sure at our events as well, we will, you know, we will engage with those people as well, respectfully, and take their question if they have a question, and then we'll move on to the next person and actually try to spend that time solving problems. These are not going to be scripted events. These are not going to be scripted questions. These are going to be opportunities for people to say, these are the problems that we're facing in our community. And then we're also going to try to spend time solving the problems locally. A lot of the best solutions, I think, that will come out for, you know, Martin County are going to come from Martin County. And I just want to know, like, what could a federal representative do to support the work in Martin County? And if Congressman Finstead wants to host teletown hall meetings or have meetings, that's his business. That's fine. We're going to do it our way. And we trust that the people of this district will decide what's best for them.
Jake Johnson, running for Congress in the first district as a Democrat. I know we will talk down the line and maybe even moderate a debate. But thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. We are back on Sunday Take. You know, every week it's more and more challenging to come up with some big take because our politics seem to be such small ball. The pettiness, the partisanship. But I took something from my interview with Jake Johnson this week that I hadn't been paying as close attention to, and that is, in this environment, when you have a very polarized electorate, how easy it is to just kind of pass by on sound bites. And I think it's something that the media has been lulled into. And the follow-up question, or the more critical angle question, or an answer with specifics, rather than just the standard soundbite, I think is what we're missing in a big way. You know, I am working on the schedule for the rest of the year, and we're going to have some debates here. Invites went out for U.S. Senate candidates of both parties. We'll try to do a CD2 and a Republican gubernatorial debate here. I'm going to moderate the Republican gubernatorial forum at Farm Fest. We'll have some general election debates, I'm sure. But those are the places where some questions get asked. There might be some rebuttals. But I'm beginning to sense that a candidate like Jake Johnson can fly through pretty easily these days. He's a teacher. He doesn't have a record in the legislature. He doesn't know how Congress works. He can say he's against special interest money, or Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan can say she's against it, but she can raise it through the Lieutenant Governors Association. There's a disingenuity about candidates these days that really is disturbing. We're not recruiting our best and our brightest to run for office, and it's a problem. And so my take this week is for candidates. Don't always play it safe. Just as the creator content that candidates keep putting out there, it's the reps of tough questions or the reps of debates that make you a better candidate and probably make you a better policymaker. This past week, Elliot Engen ran for 3 offices and will not be on the ballot for any. A young legislator, elected, Gen Z, very, very kind of good at getting through the messages. When he ran for the legislature, he kind of ran as an anti-Trump conservative. He obviously had an unfortunate personal trip up a few months ago or a month or so ago as he was running for auditor. But after 2 terms, he thought, I should run for auditor, and lifted himself up as this kind of greater than thou candidate. he then dropped out of the Otters race and was going to run for lieutenant governor. He then decided not to run for lieutenant governor and run for his House seat again, even though somebody else had been running for his House seat and been endorsed. He then decided not to run at all. It's not the running that you should aspire to. It's the serving. And the difficulty of the reps from a state representative race, pretty easy to the state auditor to when you trip up a little. And I still maintain that Governor Walz didn't face tough press, wasn't ready for his debate. And had he debated more in 2022, he might have been more ready. Had he faced tougher questions from local press, he might have been ready or more ready for the VP challenges. I can already see there's candidates who are going to avoid the tough questions, and there's candidates who are going to face them this cycle. Let's just say that any and all candidates are welcome on this show, and we hope to have them here to face smart questions, policy questions. At no more point in my career have I thought that there were more questions about our country, our state, the candidates probably need to answer with a little more depth than the average soundbite that's expected in 2026. And so my commitment to you guys is we'll try to do that here. We'll try to do it through the debates and ask for specifics. If they don't give them to us, we promise a follow-up. And I hope you follow up. Email me what we should cover the next few weeks, bloisolson@gmail.com. If your group wants a speaker, let me know. I do a lot of speaking around the state. We'll be touring the state throughout this cycle. Until next week, that's The Take. I'm Blois Olson. I'll be with Vanita Tuesday through Thursday. Hauser's in on Monday. I'll talk to him at 6:20. And you can always find our work at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, enjoy the weather. Hopefully this humidity breaks, but it's better than January and negative 20. Corzo's up next.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.